everyone, Brian Beeler coming to you with the Storage Review Podcast. And today we've got a longtime friend, Larry O'Connor from OWC. We've worked with OWC and some of their other brands for, gosh, close to a decade probably at this point. And while they're really well known in the creative pro space, we love them for build quality. I've got one of their SSDs sitting here that we'll actually be giving away after the podcast. But the design on the gear they make is phenomenal and why they're so popular. So with no further ado, Larry, thanks for joining us today straight out of Texas. How are you doing?
Doing great. Yeah, thanks for having me on. Appreciate it.
Yeah, I mean, it really has been 10 years, I think, that we've been doing this and working with you and your team on products, either, in the early days, it was upgrades for Macs back when you could do a little more upgrading back then, and then even into some of the dedicated products you did for the Creative Pro, like the Jupiter at NAB and some of these other big things. What's just the latest on where you guys are and what you're up to?
Well, we've continued to expand that hardware assortment. I mean, when it comes to creative, any data need, really, whether you're a creative pro or just somebody who needs fantastic backup, you know, we've got just about every aspect covered now, A to Z. I mean, we have portable SSDs, portable standard drives. We have arrays, you know, with up to 8 standard drives. And we have our Flex 8, which is a dock and a drive array that can now support, you know, up to roughly 20 devices inside, plus a PCIe slot. You know, whatever the need, I mean, we've got some amazing solutions, docks for adding more ports, docks that include, you know, readers, including CFast. I mean, it goes on and on and on and on. But that's so, I mean, this is all these solutions are inspired by our customers, you know, both internal and external, to fit specific needs and be the right fit, you know, for various workflows. And again, whether it's a home solution, work solution, you know, whatever they need, you know, we've got an exceptionally versatile lineup. And it's versatile, you know, for these different, you know, I guess categories, I suppose I should say, due to the software and the other behind the scenes pieces that, you know, enable, well, all the functionality they provide.
All right, well, let's talk about some of the hardware bits. I mean, I've got the portable SSD here. I've got a couple cables, and we'll get into Thunderbolt and what's going on there too a little bit. But in the world of portable gear, of Creative Pro gear, there's so much stuff out there. How is it that you guys have been able for so long? I mean, it's been, I don't know, what, 30 years you've been doing this now? How long have you been doing this?
Now we're actually in our 33rd year.
33, okay, so I was close. All right, so over 3 decades you've been doing this, and there's just so much stuff out there all the time. If you go on Amazon, there's a lot of knockoff, cheap stuff, things get produced in 8 different colors and sold by 8 different names. You guys are out there making your own, designing your own gear. Just walk me through that process and what it means for you guys to be so design heavy, so hands-on, rather than just rebadging or reproductizing someone else's gear.
Sure. I mean, of course, we started way back when, focused on upgrades and enhancing, you know, the main, you know, the computer, the main core of everybody's technology workflow. And then as we got involved with that aspect, you know, we were, I guess you say, dabbling with different drives and other needs, and just found that there wasn't consistency, or there was just a lot of products that, yeah, they put a drive in a box, but in terms of guaranteeing different levels of performance, compatibility, you know, even disclosing as we move forward in the timeline, you know, what chipset would be inside and how it would interact with the needs of different applications, especially in the audio video space, where, you know, it's nice to be able to say that something is X peak speed, or they quote an interface speed, but the real world is what really matters most. And, you know, dips in performance mean frame drops and or other editing hiccups. So as our customers' needs, you know, became very evident to us, and our own interests and our own capabilities to that we could apply to developing these solutions, you know, grew in presence. You know, we said, you know, we can do better and we can deliver a better solution to our customers. That Envoy Pro FX designer that you've been showing off, now, that's one of my, that's probably one of my most favorite new products outside of the Thunderbolt 4 cable, which is a favorite for a different reason. But that FX is,
we've got that guy too sitting here.
You say Envoy Pro FX is, I mean, there is nothing like it today in the marketplace in terms of what it offers, both in, you know, durability. I mean, you can pretty much run that over with a tank and your data is safe. I mean, almost literally with the tank, by the way. I mean, I personally run it over with, you know, a large SUV, and it's it survives intact and fully functional. It's waterproof, it's dustproof, but it also gives you the maximum performance possible whether you're on a Thunderbolt machine or on a machine with USB. I mean, it will work with effectively the last decade of systems that are either USB 3 or Thunderbolt 3 equipped, and whichever your solution, you get literally the maximum performance that interface can provide, up to, you know, I think the maximum we've actually seen reported now out by different review sites was 2914 megabytes a second, which is insanely fast. But you can still use that same drive to transfer data from a USB 3 machine from a decade ago. So right, it's really for our computer kind, and you don't have to even think about the compatibility.
Your little cable even's got the little housing adapter to get you back to USB-A if you have to drop all the way back to an older system, which is nice. It's a nice little lasso guy built onto the cable. Makes it easy.
It's got to be easy. You shouldn't have to, our big focus is that technology works for you. You should not have to work to use your technology. I believe we have very exciting products, but they're exciting because, to some degree, they can be kind of boring. Once you've installed them, once you've put the pieces into your workflow, you can pretty much forget about them. They're there to do what they need to do for you, so that you can do all the creative, productive, whatever it is you need to do without thinking about what that technology is there for, because it's there and it's doing its job without you having to spend time on it.
So what's interesting is, I mean, you talk about what goes into the design, and this thing's heavy and could probably be used to bludgeon somebody if you need to in a pinch.
I wouldn't call it super heavy, but it is definitely
okay. Look, if you took this upside the head, you're going to feel it tomorrow. Seriously, it's something that we've been exploring more, and I don't know how much you guys do this. I'm sure you do in the labs, but for a lot of bulk USB drives, thumb drives, portables, whatever, you can throw it in a machine and do a quick read write, send a file or two over, and you're going to be fine, and you'll move on with life and be happy. But what we've done recently is a lot of studies around heat dissipation in these drives, and the cases, the enclosures, the underlying heat sink that gets the drive in contact with the lid to pull that heat off makes a big difference. And we've run some workloads, not on yours, but on some other drives just recently, that over hours of use, you see a dramatic fall off from that initial peak. It just down to a tenth or 5% of what the drive's capable of. So when you talk about engineering, I'm sure that's foremost in your mind, because your guys are working, your customers, your clients are working on this drive probably as hard as or harder than anyone else works any other portable drives in the business, I would guess.
That's a true statement, and thermal throttling is something that is just not tolerable. And if you, any of our designs, and that you can take a look at the Thunderblade, which specifically, it's a cool heatsink with four blades inside and a pretty complex Thunderbolt interface. But nonetheless, everything we're going to put out there, if you're going to do SSD, you want the full performance of that SSD. And those peak speeds are really nice to advertise, but there's really two pieces that go into any of the external solutions. Number one is the drive inside. All of our solutions today on our external drives are Phison based, and they provide truly top performance for the interfaces that we build with those solutions. The other aspect, even if you have a drive that peaks fast, even before thermal throttling, there's a boatload of just crappy QLC drives out there that give you a moment of those beautiful, 2,000, 3,000 megabyte per second, bursts, and then 5 seconds later, they might be slower than, actually a lot of them are slower than, a SATA drive. I mean, it's pretty ridiculous. But then the other aspect is, if you have a drive like ours that's fast and is able to sustain ongoing throughputs in the 2,000, 2,500 meg per second range, it also needs to be properly thermally dissipating so that you don't end up with thermal throttling. What's the point of having a fast drive if you have a crappy enclosure for it? And there's a lot of, you see them everywhere, but these really thin, flimsy plastic, some cases, or very thin aluminum enclosures that, they're mounted to drive and they seem to work, but when you least expect it, perhaps if you're not expecting it, suddenly performance goes into the toilet because the drive is overheated inside. That's not good.
No, we just saw that from a name brand gaming dock multi-port deal with a NVMe drive inside, and the fan it had a little teeny fan, and it just wasn't enough if it even turned on. And we were able to push that outside of the thermal limits for what that drive wanted to be spec'd at. And yeah, you're right. I mean, you just go off the cliff, and then it's game over. Now you've spent several hundred dollars, if not more, into a piece of hardware that you presumably would work, you would trust would work, but under load, it just some of these things fall down pretty hard.
And pretty quick as well. And I'd point out, I mean, we don't use fans in these solutions. Now, you don't, to me, you don't want to depend upon a fan, because now you're in a situation where if that fan gets clogged up with dust and other dirt, or just fails over time, either the fan itself is going to get noisy over time and be a fail point, or it's something that, well, is just going to be annoying and an additional noise that if you're on an SSD product is not necessary if you have a proper design. Now, we want the best thing that we can do in engineering is eliminating the different fail points. The fewer points of failure, the better the overall experience, and there's just the less you have to worry about.
Well, yeah, we have this debate all the time, especially on PC boards. Now, it's all the rage for the more of the gaming brands, enthusiast brands, to put these massive heat sinks on the drive, and it's like, well, okay, I mean, those look neat. It's not going to fit real well in a notebook, but to your point, having better thermals built into the system is a better idea than adding more pieces, more complexity to the overall design. But we're talking about this Thunderbolt guy. I got to ask you, because you know more about connectivity and interfaces than probably anyone else that I know. What is going on with the standards these days? I know we've got Thunderbolt 4 now, and we can talk about that a little bit, but this USB 3.2 Gen 2x2, this whole difficulty in terms of getting higher speed performance. We've got Thunderbolt 3, obviously. A lot of different products out there, different drives is causing so much confusion, because everyone sees this this USB-C tip and assumes that they're all the same thing, and they're not, and the drives aren't, and it's created a tremendous amount of confusion out there. What do you guys think about that? What are you facing, and what do you know about all of this?
I would say our biggest frustration with USB Type-C is just lack of enforcement of what's Thunderbolt and what's not. There's a lot of advertising out there that implies that a USB drive is a Thunderbolt drive. They show the cable, they may say Thunderbolt compatible, and then you plug it in and it might only be USB 3.1 Gen 1. It might be, it may be USB 3.2 or 3.2 or 3.1 Gen 2. I mean, USB kind of, all these different USB versions. But, 10 gigabits is currently the highest performance of any external USB device versus 40 gigabits for Thunderbolt 3 and Thunderbolt 4. Now, Thunderbolt 4 versus Thunderbolt 3 is intended to establish standards that are 100% consistent, 100% compatible, and without fail across platforms. It's more of a marketing position than it was. It's not really a new technology, as everything that Thunderbolt 4 does, with the exception of the USB 4 integration, is already present. If we just focus on Thunderbolt, there's nothing today that Thunderbolt 4 does that Thunderbolt 3 either couldn't do or didn't do. And when we look at Thunderbolt 4 devices, like our Thunderbolt 4 hub, and actually our Thunderbolt 4 Thunderbolt hub, I should say, with Thunderbolt 4 and our Thunderbolt dock that takes advantage of Thunderbolt 4. That's a chipset change, not really a giant, it's not a standards change. And those Thunderbolt 4 devices, or Thunderbolt 4 chipset-based devices, work perfectly fine on all the Macs going back to 2016 with Thunderbolt 3. Now, what we have on the PC side of the fence is a whole hash of different standards that were allowed for what Thunderbolt 3 could be as an implementation on a PC. Now, there could be 20 gig. It could have been Thunderbolt 3 ready, where you have to add a card. It could have been Thunderbolt 3 20 gigabits. It could have been Thunderbolt 3 with 40 gigabits. It could have been Thunderbolt 3, but no video support. It could have been Thunderbolt 3 without power delivery support. All these different types of Thunderbolt 3, floated around on the PC, or out there on different PCs. So when you go from one PC to another with Thunderbolt, it's unfortunately not as consistent of an experience as Thunderbolt really intends to provide. Thunderbolt 4 simply means, for at its simplest, that I say message, that you're going to have, no matter what machine you buy, what system you buy, if it has Thunderbolt 4, it's 40 gigabits, It does power delivery. It supports two 4K devices. It supports up to one 8K device. And they kind of added a video standard in there. Which to me kind of, yeah, it confuses what Thunderbolt's about. Because I mean, if you look at, and I don't want to, I could spend hours probably talking about this.
but you kind of, I mean, someone needs to, because it's confusing, and clearly you highlighted all the nonsense on the PC side. We see it all the time. We'll see a NAS, for instance, that has Thunderbolt support on it and be like, oh, wow, that's really cool, because now you can have shared storage, you can direct connect and move files over and do all this cool stuff. And then you get it out there and deploy it and find out that it works on Macs but not on PCs, because the Thunderbolt, something with the Thunderbolt standards isn't right. It just provides a really bad experience for consumers overall. I don't know how it got so far away with this. And then now this USB by two thing is really neat, because now we can get 2,000 megabytes a second out of portable drives, but with a universal connector, universal port, which is kind of neat. But the port just isn't out there. We had to buy an add-in card to throw from Orco to put in one of our systems to be able to get that to test those drives. We're still not seeing the ports on the PC side come out that way. And of course, Mac doesn't do the by two. So it's still just quite a mess.
Thunderbolt is pretty clean for off-record purposes. And Thunderbolt 4 does, at least for the Thunderbolt side of things, clean things up substantially. And if you're a Mac user, you don't have to worry about Thunderbolt 3 or Thunderbolt 4, because Apple, supports with OS 11 and higher, it doesn't matter Thunderbolt 3, Thunderbolt 4. Previous to OS 11, you can't use the newer chipset devices, but that's not a limitation of those machines not supporting Thunderbolt 4. It's, when Titan Ridge came out, which is a Thunderbolt 3 chipset in 2018, you had to upgrade to a newer OS version to have the support included with the OS for some of the new chipset features. And just as a point, Titan Ridge from 2018 supported 8K video, supports the 2.4K, supports basically everything that today's Thunderbolt 4 standard requires. Again, Thunderbolt 4 on a computer, on a host, just means that you're going to have everything. You're going to have a consistent experience between systems, and that's a big plus. And Thunderbolt 4, we should get in the cables. Thunderbolt 4 cables are the best thing ever. They are.
Okay. Hold on a second. Before you get so excited about a cable, I'm going to let you get excited. You guys sent us over a couple of these, 0.8 meter cables. And I was told, I don't know if this is marketing fluff or not, that you guys sold out of these things. How can that be for a cable? Why is there so much excitement over a Thunderbolt 4 cable?
People are putting them out either. If they're not cutting their cables, they're certainly putting them into a emergency reserve. The Thunderbolt 4 cable works with everything that's Type-C, no matter what. Doesn't matter, whether it's a USB device, doesn't matter if it's power, doesn't matter. Thunderbolt 3 and Thunderbolt 4 are both 40 gigabit, but whereas you even have some variation in Thunderbolt 3 cables, and that are less than a meter, that are 0.8 meter, 0.7 meter, are technically have the same universality as those Thunderbolt 4 cables. For everything other than USB 4, the 2x2 USB 4. Mm-hmm. Thunderbolt 4 cables, it will not matter. If it connects C to C, whatever your host can do, whatever the device can do, the limitation is only at the host or the device level. The maximum interface, the maximum power, whatever that pair of devices, the host and the external device can do, are capable of, you will get through a Thunderbolt 4 cable. People get these USB-C cables that look really nice, really high quality in some cases, or they look like they're high quality.
Pretty, yeah, right.
Just because a cable's thick and heavy doesn't mean the materials in it are rated for high power or rated for data. And you look at the PC OEMs, what you get with laptops are high quality cables, C to C for going to a C laptop charger, where such is used. But those cables are typically limited in either maximum power delivery or data. A lot of those cables, USB-C specifications require nothing more than USB-2 data rates to be supported in a cable. So when you get a cable that's for a power adapter, a lot of the time it's for power and it has just basic USB-2 data capability, which is that's 480 megabits, not 5 gigabits. It's slow, and people will pull these cables out. They feel really nice. They are really nice cables. They came from a major computer OEM. I should say computer manufacturing, an OEM.
Sure.
But then they plug them into a portable storage device. Gosh, why is this not working? They plug it into a dock. I mean, we're happy. We're really happy with Thunderbolt 4 cables because it's going to be a lot less tech support calls. You know, we won't have these folks calling up, just screaming why half the ports aren't working. Everything was fine. And you find out, well, they're moving the dock back and forth, or they're moving between computers. And they have a cable that you sometimes have to spend, 5 or 10 minutes explaining. Yes, we know it's a really high quality cable. It came with your Apple laptop, but that cable doesn't do data. I mean, certainly not at 10 gigabit, which is what you need for the dock. And that's why the dock's not working. But it works great. It's awesome. No, it doesn't work great or awesome. They work great for powering your laptop. For connecting your dock, it's a no-go. And, often we get past that. But it's frustrating. You pull out, like you said, you look at the C2C cables, they all look the same. I mean, they really do. And, why one works and one doesn't work in some cases is a mystery, because especially in the USB realm, just connecting USB devices, most USB cables don't have good labeling. You don't know what the cable's rated for. You don't know if the cable is, depending on where you bought it from, you don't even know if that cable is safe, for if you have a 90 watt or 96 watt power draw you want to use, for your laptop. You don't even know if that cable is necessarily safe.
It fits. That's the problem, right? Is it fits and it looks like it's all cool until it's not.
I mean, I look at the cables on the shelf, every place sells USB-C cables now. I mean, Home Depot's got USB cables sitting on little shelf racks.
Right next to the Snickers on the way out the door.
That's right, and the Doritos right on. But, you look at the small print, and it says, it's a 30-watt or maybe it's a 60-watt USB-C power cable. And then you look at the cable, and there's no labeling on the cable to tell you that it's only 30 or 60-watt. At least when you buy a quality name-brand cable, whatever that cable is rated for is going to be limited to delivering power-wise. But some of these cheap cables, and certainly they were out in the early days of USB, and people showed issues with them. They're not rated to support 100 watts, but if you plug them into something that gives 100 watts, that's going to something that'll take it, they'll try to they'll provide that power transfer, and guess what? They're not safe. So Thunderbolt 4, when you buy a Thunderbolt 4 cable, doesn't matter what the length is, doesn't matter, what devices you're connecting to, what power, 100% of the time you have maximum data and maximum power, safe and reliable. And they're darn cost. I mean, you're not talking a giant cost delta to have these cables. And the amount of time you save, just knowing when you pull out a Thunderbolt 4 cable and use the connector C device, I mean, that's pretty priceless. You can't replace lost time fighting the tech support issue that, everything worked before. Why is it not working now? And that's
no. I'm glad I have my two, because you obviously sold the heck out of these things. So when you tell me about this cable. I don't know if anyone else is going to care as much as I do, but what do you do from an engineering standpoint when you guys sit down? Whenever you designed this 6-8 months ago, a year ago, whenever it was. What's the plan? Like, hey guys, let's go make a TB4 cable. Someone draw it up. Let's go. Like, how does that even work?
In fairness, on the cables, there's a lot of reference design where we have choices, or the cable, the housing of the cable, the tension release points, the actual front. So it's we've been doing cables for a long time, and our big goal is, of course, durability and reliability. We aren't in that boat of wanting to sell something that's got a fixed life. We really want to sell products that go the distance and don't need to be replaced. You may need more of them because you have more devices or more places to use them, but we really strive to build cables that don't fail. That's a lose-lose. I mean, we don't see cables as consumable, and when it comes to the design factor and what we put into any of our cables, it's about durability and longevity.
Well, that's good. I can't believe we spent 9 minutes talking about cables, but it's a good point, because I think there is a lot of confusion. You talk about, you look at one and they have the same ends and it looks good to go. But we've had plenty of drives, portable SSDs that come in even with the included cable, and we'll plug it in and be benchmarking, and the performance just sucks. And we'll be like, oh my gosh, this thing's broken, which happens all the time. Or Kevin will be like, well, we'll just throw another cable on there just to be sure. And lo and behold, performance is back to where it needs to be. I think it's one of the most underappreciated elements of portable storage is the cable that people think a basics $9 whatever is fine, and for most cases it's maybe it is for charging your phone or whatever, maybe. But if you really want peak performance out of your portable storage, it makes a difference.
It does, and certainly over the course of, you know, of the life of that product, it will probably make a bigger difference. And some you'd ask, you know, how could somebody include a cable that's not even right or able to give the proper performance with, you know, with the device it came with? And I think when you buy from, you know, certainly when you purchase something from OWC, you know, we're not just, you know, throwing some chipsets together, spinning up a board, throwing a bunch of parts together and shipping it out. I mean, the amount of testing and engineering design work that goes into making sure that product is going to operate correctly, operate at full capability, you know, have durability, you know, have longevity. That's a big part of, you know, what goes into any of these products. If we were just throwing, you know, crap together and throwing, you know, putting boxes out, you know, it's just pretty easy to build a cheap USB box. It's not easy to you know, build a cheap USB box that's going to work right and operate with everything the way you expect it to. And we stand behind what we ship as well. I mean,
that's one of the problems that I was saying before is that, as you know, you know, tool around Amazon or Newegg, there's so much trash out there that it's tempting because it's inexpensive, but the time that you'll save by buying, you know, something better the first time is a big difference. All right, let's shift gears for a minute. I don't know, you guys, I've seen you at NAB before. Do you guys do that on a regular basis, that show as part of your circuit back when things, you know, happened in person?
Yeah, we've done NAB for about the last decade now. And if all goes well, we'll be back at NAB. I believe right now it's scheduled for October of this year.
Yeah, that I just found out about that this week. Someone said, hey, NAB's back in person. I was shocked and excited. I was curious to get your take. Is that something you think you'll do if it's existing in person?
Oh, yeah, we're already committed. We're already planning.
You're in.
I got to say, right. I mean, I'm mixed. I mean, I kind of go both ways. I mean, these shows are, you know, they certainly are. I mean, they're busy, they're expensive. I mean, it's a week away from, you know, the operation. There's a lot of resources that goes in. At the same time, I still have to say there's nothing that beats the in-person communication, you know, that can happen at these shows. Even, you know, just one person can make, you know, a show for us. You know, we come back with just a lot of good feedback, a lot of, it's just interaction you don't get via Zoom or Skype or, you know, any of the chat platforms. You know, even, you know, for me, I was back up at our headquarters for the first time in a year. It's actually 2 weeks ago. You know, it was fantastic. You know, we do quarterly town halls. I'm going to tell you, doing town halls, you know, behind a camera versus, granted, it was a limited audience, you know, of our team, but being there in person, being able to talk in person to folks, there's nothing yet replaces that.
Oh, yeah. I went to Denver, Boulder, Tech Center 2 weeks ago, and it was the first time in about a year that I had traveled for business, and it just felt good to see people, to see professional friends, you know, those kind of things that you're right. I mean, the trade shows get to be a drag because you're gone so long, but at the same time, you get all of that in-person communication that's just, you know, the Zooms, they're fine. I mean, this is okay, this web-based communication, but I mean, it'd be more fun to hang out in person and see these people. So anyway, I'm glad you're doing that. And for the NAB show, I know it's early for planning, but obviously you'll have all sorts of stuff there. I want to learn a little bit more too about the Jellyfish deal and what you're doing with that product. So what's the latest there and that part of the company?
Sure. Jellyfish and LumaForge are now part of OWC as of about 6 weeks ago. You know, we've been working to bring that together for actually, that started even pre-COVID. You know, Jupiter has been our enterprise storage solution now for, you know, about the last decade in development. It has a place in, you know, whether it's just straight storage, it's been in video production. You know, it's been an area that we've been building over the years. And Jellyfish, you know, they really came into the market with a very strong focus and specialty on the M&E, on the video production space, in development technologies that, quite frankly, are really exceptional. They have great field users, and it was something that, you know, bringing that into OWC, they're on for video production from that standpoint. You know, it fits right in the center of all of our direct attached stores that's centered on that space. And for Jupyter, it brings us technologies that were in development internally, but allows us to leapfrog and provide a better platform both for our enterprise customers while bringing our hardware design and hardware pieces over to Jellyfish to make the Jellyfish, as we move forward, an even better product, and all under the support umbrella of OWC. And I really want to emphasize, we didn't just bring the product and the technology into OWC. You know, we brought effectively the entire LumaForce Jellyfish team into OWC as well. I mean, that's, you know, where the magic, you know, people in general, whether, you know, with OWC at large, and certainly that was the case with LumaForce, people make the difference, and are really excited just for all the great talent and capability we've got in OWC before and added to with the integration of LumaForge.
Well, their configurator, as you know, is one of the neater ways to put together a little storage solution. I say little but they obviously go very big. That's pretty neat. I like how you can select all the ports and kind of go through and very almost whimsical in spending several thousand dollars. That's pretty neat. What's the go forward plan to bring some of your engineering prowess, I assume, to their product and continue to improve that?
It's already there. I mean, in terms of integrating Jupyter is a very strong enterprise foundation in terms of the hardware side, and interfacing that with Jellyfish. Jellyfish is strongly driven by great software technology, and combined, I mean, it's hard to go into too much detail other than to say, I mean, together, I mean, it's a match made in heaven. And I've seen there's been some interesting takes in Jellyfish out there. I mean, some folks try to really oversimplify what it is. There is nothing out there that gives, you know, a small work group the ability to produce, edit, you know, and just get video work done like Jellyfish. Can you build similar hardware? You can build just about anything that's out there today. Does it work? And will you be spending time on, you know, well, your productivity, your creativity on actually what your job is versus, you know, doing IT and IS and, you know, on a regular basis trying to make keep the thing working? Not with something that you today that you, you know, DIY. I mean, Jellyfish, right, can be that. Again, I like to say it fits in OWC is that boring piece of hardware, boring because once it's plugged in and going, you don't have to think about it. You're not, it's just there doing its job so that you can do yours. You know, your energy needs to be on, you know, producing, creating, you know, generating that final output, that final work piece, not, you know, kicking the box every 5 minutes to try and coerce it to do what you need it to do.
Well, it's funny though, because those in a small agency or a creative shop or whatever, those guys tend to be technical when it comes to their machines and their software and their applications and, you know, their displays and pens and all this other stuff, right? They're really technical about that, but they don't want to manage enterprise infrastructure. They don't want to manage networks, but they often get thrown into that job. And we've seen that time and time again, where a small work group will start out on a NAS, on a Synology, QNAP, whatever, and it'll work out really well for a period of time. But as soon as you start to, when you add that fourth or that fifth or sixth person or whatever it is that is the breaking point, when they all start to be scrubbing video at the same time or whatever, it doesn't generally break easily. It breaks pretty hard when you hit that wall. And now you've got a productivity problem where, what are you going to do? Tell one of your people to not work because we're trying to render video on these other systems? It's untenable. So, you know, what they were doing with Jellyfish before, what you guys are going to do going forward should be pretty interesting. I'll be interested to see how that plays out for you. It looks very promising.
Again, the capabilities go beyond just the hardware. I mean, there's a lot of software elements in addition to make it easy, right, to connect to Jellyfish. Also are there to aid and support and enable more efficient editing and production and sharing of video. And the cloud is a big piece, you know, being incorporated in both Jupyter and Jellyfish, you know, products as we go forward.
Well, tell me about that. What does cloud mean to you? Because we've talked a lot about your hardware solutions, but there, as you're saying, there's a lot of software and importance there too. Tell me about the cloud and how that plays in.
Sure. For all of OWC's product line, including Jellyfish and Jupyter, you know, cloud actually kind of means there's two different areas of, you know, cloud capability that we're focused on. And number one is remote sharing, and making it easy for anybody remotely to access and share and collaborate on data that's in one location, as well as be able to replicate and have backups of that data on, at another location you own control on similar hardware. The other piece of cloud is enabling cloud backup, but also cloud, you know, computing, cloud storage, services that would be supplemental to your direct attach or local Jellyfish solution, but gives you a cloud presence, again, for easier sharing, you know, advanced perhaps its editing capability, you know, things that you can't do with your local system that we can provide via cloud capabilities. And we've got some of those, you know, pieces right now, and you know, their first, I guess, early deployments, and it's going pretty well. We're pretty excited about it. But I, you know, one thing I absolutely always try to emphasize, you know, I am not a believer that, you know, putting everything up in the cloud is a great solution. You lose control over, to some degree, you lose control over your data ownership. I mean, when I say data ownership, certainly the ability for you to know that that data is always safe and secure. As reliable as those services are, if something happens to your data online, you may have you don't want to be in a situation where that's the only place it exists and it's not replaceable.
Like that OVH fire this week that took out an entire data center and part of others? That was pretty nasty.
Yeah, things like that don't happen if you control. I mean, granted, you know, disasters happen at locations individually, but if you, it's from a cost point of view, especially when you look at how much, and that's the other aspect, the cloud gets very expensive to use storage and computing as your primary. You know, local ownership, where you don't have a heavy IT or IS load requirement because the solutions take care of that for you, you know, become far more effective in terms of total cost of ownership over time than, you know, having a growing dependency on just cloud-based. So you have faster local access, you're not dependent on, you know, bandwidth and perhaps, you know, peak network time impacting, you know, what you wish to accomplish, and you're not paying, you know, a growing monthly fee to do your computing and do your storage remotely, where again you still don't have the performance or the versatility you get from having it where your work group is. You know, there's a place for the cloud, and there should always be a balance. I see the cloud more tertiary than primary, you know, supplemental than, you know, the core. But it is to me very important. It's really easy and tempting just to throw it all up on the cloud. I mean, the whole point of the cloud, I mean, there are a lot of bits of ease with the cloud, but you really do pay a steep price. And it amazes me today, you know, especially when, I'm kind of getting involved with different startups out there. You know, 20 years ago, everybody built their own servers. Everybody had their own local infrastructure. Today, everybody just does everything on the cloud, and without even an understanding, even an inkling of just what that costs is. You know, the cloud in some environments costs, you know, on an annual basis, you know, 3 to 4x what it would cost to one-time buy that hardware and hire a full-time IT person.
The problem is it's too easy, right?
It is. And you start off small, and that's kind of hook you in, and you know, before you know it, you don't even realize that, you know, there are other options. But
it's funny too, because then, you know, a lot of people forget. They think cloud, well, Amazon or Azure, whoever backs it up or moves it around or protects my data, and they really don't. In fact, I had three phone calls this week where we were talking about data protection in the cloud. It's unbelievable how little people are protecting their data, and not even doing the minimum of taking some snapshots or something to make sure they've got access to another copy in another zone or can move things to other places in the event that there's some sort of failure, like that one happening in Europe right now.
It's unfortunate. I mean, I will be honest. I mean, it took a near data loss event for me probably like 25, maybe 26 years ago to actually get me doing regular backups. And hopefully, folks don't need.
You feel that pain once, so you don't want to ever live it again.
I remember the drive. It was a Quantum. I think it was a Quantum 4.5 gigabyte. You know, drives were really small back. This is maybe 27 years ago now. And fortunately, I was able to toss it in a freezer for half an hour, came out, gave it a tap, and it was back spinning. My data was instantly replicated amongst several other external drives I had at the time. I made sure that the company's data was not going to ever live on a single point of failure.
The days when throwing hard drives in freezers was a viable troubleshooting technique is... I've got those scars as well. That's pretty bad.
That doesn't work on today's drives. Don't try that. You know, a tap of the hammer and, you know, the freezer trick does not work today.
No, not a gentle tap of the hammer. Gentle. Well, that's funny. So as you think about NAB coming up in October, as you sort of look forward to what's going on there and some of the new workloads, talking about cloud, using it maybe as a tier for some of the other stuff you're doing for cold data or archive data makes a lot of sense. What's going on with your customers in terms of their workloads? What's changing? Obviously, we're seeing the transition to denser video formats, bigger files. What else is happening in your world or your customers' world that's interesting there?
Well, there's a huge shift. I mean, during COVID, of course, to the whole work from home, and that included video production work groups. So, I mean, demand for products like that Envoy Pro you've got on your desk there, went through the roof. Docs, to make it easy for people to move their office or studio workflows home, have been critical to, this whole work from home COVID thing. But I think people have also, again, there's the benefits of being in person, but people have also found, how capable they can be at home, with the right setup. So it's going to be interesting to see as we get past COVID, just, what remains at home and how people kind of hybridize their work from home and work in person workflows. But docs are big, portable storage, fast portable storage, so it's easy to move data back and forth. Those things have been, huge in demand. Depending on the internet became a bigger challenge during COVID just because everybody's on the internet. I mean, it's
right.
For school, for work, for you name it, and those pipes, they have limitations. So nothing beats having locally available, connected, fast storage.
That is true. That should be. Do you have that tattooed on your inner arm there or something?
I should.
That's a lot of words. Some people have Bible verses. You have storage sayings on the inside of the bicep. That might be something for you. We've covered a lot of ground. We've spent 9 minutes on your cable. Anything else we missed that you guys are excited about?
We're excited about just about everything. I mean, the docs. If you want to talk about
all of it.
Thunderbolt 4, our Thunderbolt hub and our Thunderbolt docks, which both benefit from the new Goshen Ridge Thunderbolt 4 chipsets. I mean, for the very first time, you can now plug a single device into a single device into a host and have more Thunderbolt ports. We've been looking forward to this for a decade. I mean, we had solutions to do this before. I mean, going back, 6-7 years, but they were not the kinds of solutions that Intel, let alone Apple, would approve for production. They had to work around limitations that, weren't necessarily ideal to design. But being able to provide people with more of the ports that they need, it's great for using bus power devices. It's also great for using devices, that you, instead of daisy chaining, you can plug direct into the sub or the dock and have better performance and more stability as well. Thunderbolt is fantastic, but it does get even more fantastic, with the advent of these kinds of solutions that eliminate the limitations you sometimes have with daisy chaining. Certainly, again, with devices that you can't daisy chain through, as well as just better stability, better performance by not extending that chain out with cable length. I mean, Thunderbolt is external PCIe. The closer you can keep devices to the computer, to the host, the better the overall experience and performance is going to be.
All right. And as I said at the top, one of our lucky viewers / listeners will be taking this thing home and getting to experience the Envoy Pro FX and this extremely heavy heatsink for their own. So check out our social media for that. Lucy will be out promoting that contest shortly. Larry, thanks for checking in. This was a fun conversation, and I certainly hope to run you down in person in Vegas come October.
Yeah, looking forward to seeing everybody again. And it'll unfortunately be sooner than later now. I mean, there is light at the end of the tunnel, but in the meantime, we're still cranking full speed ahead. And hey, I think what we've learned over the last year is going to just make everything better and safer for the go forward. So, I mean, we used to dismiss the flu, and I think we're going to have a different approach for all these different bugs out there.
Well, there's a lot to that, and I hope you're right. I hope we're all healthy and see each other soon. And thanks again for tuning in. Really appreciate it and your participation today.